Hello, everyone, and welcome to the AP Top 25 College Football Podcast. I'm Ralph Russo, the college football writer with the Associated Press. This week, my guest is Andy Staples from Sports Illustrated. We'll talk about coaches on headsets, transferring within conference, and our favorite off-season filler content. Thanks again for listening to the AP Top 25 College Football Podcast. You can find us on Apple Podcasts. Please subscribe, maybe give us a good review. And as usual, you can find us at collegefootball.ap.org, where you can read all of AP's college football coverage, and away we go. So joining me this week on the AP Top 25 College Football Podcast is Andy Staples from Sports Illustrated. Andy kind of did this on semi-short notice, and he's in Destin, where the SEC is meeting this week, because the SEC, nobody meets like the SEC. Not a ton of news going on this college football offseason, and as I knock the table here, that's not necessarily the worst thing in the world. It gives us a little more free time when there's no scandals or things erupting. But when there is nothing of real significance going on, you got to find something to write and fill the space. Last week, you filled that space by a new rule that the NCAA passed, saying that no more than 20 people can be on the headset during a game for each team, which is a lot of people anyway. So it's not like they really like cut that thing short here and drop the hammer. I mean, 20 involves every coach and some grad assistants and a couple of more people. You took the position that this was a
mascot.
Yeah, who else do you need on this headset? You sort of took
only three people are allowed to talk, so who cares?
Well, right, because then what are they doing if they're on the headset, if they're not actually allowed to talk at the same time? So you sort of spun this as another reason why the NCAA is sort of like sort of targets Saban and like, hey, what are you doing over there that where you're trying to push the rules? So, you know, give us an idea of why this might be sort of another Nick Saban-inspired rule.
Well, it's because Nick Saban is the greatest job creator in the history of the state of Alabama. You know, the man just keeps hiring people. They have analysts for each assistant coach. They have analysts for each analyst. They have analysts for each analyst. And look, that's fine. It's their money. They can spend it however they want.
I mean, they're not allowed to spend it on any more than the players, but
right. At least they're not. Yeah, they're not allowed to do that. Right.
In fact, if they could do that, then they'd not hire so many analysts. But It's when you say the NCAA made this rule, no, the schools made this rule.
Right.
And so it's coaches who are tired of getting beat by Nick Saban who are not smart enough to understand that Nick Saban beats them because he's smarter than they are and not because of the way the rules are set up. And they also don't realize that trying to out-legislate Nick Saban will only get you beat worse because, again, he's smarter than you. He will figure it out. But you won't because you're dumb and he's smart. So that's kind of the biggest problem with attempting to out-legislate Nick Saban is it makes the coaches who are already going to lose to him usually lose by more because he's smarter at figuring out how to deal with whatever rules you hand him, he'll figure it out.
Right. This harkens back to the Blazing Saddle line. Don't shoot him; you'll only make him angry. Right.
I'd say exactly.
Like Nick Saban is Mongo. Right. You just don't. Yeah. You don't mess with Mongo. I've been talking.
Saban is not a pawn in the game of life, though.
No, he's definitely not a pawn in the game of life. Here's the thing. So I was talking to a couple of assistant coaches about another story, and the idea of sign stealing came up. And this is, I think, where the headset deal becomes a little problematic, or where. Because coaches worry about everything.
Can I tell you what sign stealing is? You know who gets their sign stolen?
People who don't.
People who are too stupid to change their sign.
No, totally.
Again, stupid people having problems getting beaten by smart people.
But
the rules won't help them.
Okay, but here's the core of this issue, though. Or at least one of the elements of this issue. So much of what is being done nowadays in football is being done at the line, right? It's no longer no huddle, run up, call a play. It's no huddle, run up, see what you're doing, and then literally have the coach call the play while you're at the line of scrimmage. Because that's not quarterbacks.
Check with me.
Yeah, those aren't quarterbacks doing that reading. So now the coaches are reading the defense and calling the plays. And I've had a couple of defensive coordinators, and a couple of them who have played in the who have coached in the SEC, are like, they did not specifically say Alabama, but you can sort of see where they're going. It's like they got all these people, they, anonymous, have all these people on the headsets, and some of them are just looking at our sign. They're just trying to figure out, like, you know, a tendency with the sign.
Your signs are so easily decipherable, you have bad signs.
Right. But
I don't know how to break this to these guys, but there are occasionally 100,000 people in the stadium and millions more watching on television.
Right. I will.
They're not doing this in private.
This does, but I will say this. You're right. You're trying to legislate against the something that's unlegislatable, or which is Nick Saban.
Well, no, I mean, here's the thing. If you're doing things in public that are supposed to be secret and people are figuring them out, that's your fault.
Right.
No one else's. That's it.
I totally buy that.
There's no rules to help these people.
Okay, but wait a second.
They will lose no matter what.
I do understand the idea of, let's limit how many people can be on these things, because, again, to a certain degree, like,
if these were baseball coaches, they would ban runners on second base.
Okay, but no, but let me tie this to, because this is basically tied to staff size. And I've always found, like, yeah, it's a little bit whiny because, right, Saban's just hiring all these analysts and half of them have been head coaches. But I do sort of find myself thinking, like, shouldn't there be some cap on how many people are allowed to help coach your football team? No, but even in the NFL, there is. You can't have, like, an unlimited amount of players in the
private organization where everything is collectively bargained.
Right. But shouldn't
the NCAA is not.
But the one thing the NCAA,
public schools.
The one thing the NCAA is tasked with is creating some type of atmosphere of competitive balance within the rules of the sport. So forget about paying players and all the stuff that the NCAA sort of gets involved in from a recruiting standpoint, from a sort of global standpoint, and people want them to start, you know, being involved in even more stuff. But when it comes to just sort of like creating a somewhat of a framework of competitiveness.
Can I tell you why this particular case they can't do it?
Why?
There's a history lesson. Years ago, in not football, in other sports, there were whiny coaches who felt like if you were able to pay a third assistant more in basketball or a third assistant more in baseball, that would create a competitive disadvantage. So they decided to cap the pay of these coaches, and they called them restricted earnings coaches. And they got the NCAA got slapped with an antitrust lawsuit and lost.
Right.
And had to pay a bunch of money to these people whose salaries were unfairly capped. Right. If you cap an entire job space involving a bunch of public universities, you're going to lose that antitrust lawsuit that will inevitably be filed. So it's not worth going down that road for them. And that is why they cannot do a staff size cap. And this is where you say, but they limited it to 10 on-field assistants, and that's okay. Well, yes, because there's the relief valve of you can hire someone as a support staffer if you don't have room to hire them as an on-field assistant. There has to be some sort of relief valve there. If you cap it entirely, if you close the system, if you say there will be this many jobs in major college football, then all of a sudden you've opened yourself up to an antitrust suit because you are capping a job market.
Right. And the antitrust laws are not kind to NCAA and college in the college enterprise in general, which also makes it the other story, like sort of mini story that's popped up the last week, is that, hey, California wants to put a cap on coaches' salaries in their state. That's not going to happen. Like, that's it's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
It's fun to write the story and put Chip Kelly's picture on the story and pop it up online. But
and everybody
that's not
put Chip Kelly's picture. Nobody put Justin Wilcox or Rocky Long's picture. I'm so disappointed by that.
Right. Those guys make a lot of money, too, by the way. And they certainly all make more than 200 grand.
That's the one state I would expect something like that to come out of.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the whole state's rights thing.
California over-legislates everything except you can buy liquor in a drugstore there.
Right.
You can't do that in states that are much more permissive of everything, that always shocks me. It's like the one time California and Louisiana's laws line up. The one and only time.
Well, I just spent most of my past weekend in New Jersey, where I'm still not allowed to pump my own gas. So, and Jersey is not a heavily overrated.
It's not like Oregon, where it's a hippie thing.
You know what? It's still wrong. Yeah, but it's still wrong, though. It's still just wrong.
Oh, it's terribly wrong, but it's a mob thing. It's Jersey. Come on.
It's a mob thing, right? It's a little bit of a job creation thing. But I'm sorry. There's got to be better things for us to employ these people.
The first time I tried to get gas in Oregon, I had no idea this law. I had no idea it existed. And it was about 4:30 in the morning at a gas station near the Portland Airport. And I pull up in my car, and I get out, and I begin to pump the gas. And the guy runs out of the little booth. What are you doing? Stop! And then he's like, how did you even know how to do that? I was like, I don't know how to tell you this. Not a very tough skill to master. And I do it all the time. And you can just see in his head, like, oh my gosh. My whole world's about to come crashing down if other people figure this out.
Right. Now that you can do this, what am I to do? What do you mean you can simply walk out of your car, swipe your card, and pump this gas? Yeah, that's an existential moment, unfortunately, for a lot of folks. Yeah, and you're right.
It's an existential moment in the nanny state. Yes.
Yeah, to a certain degree. You know, right, in Jersey, the other issue that you haven't done a lot of driving in Jersey because there's not a lot of college football in Jersey. I do a lot of driving in Jersey because it's next to New York.
When I'm in Jersey, it's maybe flying into Newark and then taking a train into New York.
Yeah, the other
I've not had the opportunity to drive around New Jersey very much, no.
The other incredibly problematic thing when you're driving around New Jersey, aside from the fact that you can't pump your own gas, is if, like, you can't make rights without making lefts or lefts without making rights. There are certain roads that, like, you can't turn off of them. You actually have to, like, go off of them, make a couple of turns, and then they dump you back on. So, like, if you miss your turn in Jersey, you're going, like, 6 miles out of your way.
Oh, it's like the service road system in Texas.
Oh, yeah, yes. Texas has some of that too. Right. Texas has some of that. Like, no, you're on this road, and that's it. No, you're not turning. You can't turn off. This is it. You have dedicated yourself to 7 miles on this road now.
But see, if you told Nick Saban that, he'd figure out how to make a U-turn legally.
So the other thing,
we hire 7 analysts to do it.
Yeah. You know what? Let's do this. We're going to take a quick break and then we'll come back and talk about where games will be found on TV, because you had an interesting idea about that in the future and how wrestling may have provided a path to college sports, which is interesting. So we're going to take a break on the AP Top 25 College Football Podcast and come back with Andy Staples in just a second. And we're back on the AP Top 25 College Football Podcast. I'm Ralph Russo. I'm joined by Andy Staples from Sports Illustrated. Andy is in Destin, Florida, to cover the SEC meetings. Very briefly on the SEC meetings this week, they're going to talk about transfer rules because that's a thing that people are doing these days. They're going to talk about some Rice Commission stuff, some of the rules that the Rice Commission wants to implement as far as, like, really harsh penalties to schools that cheat. That's sort of on the agenda this week. The SEC is talking about what every other conference is talking about, but the SEC just talks about it very loudly and publicly.
So that, they talk about it louder than everybody.
Yeah, so that's why you'll hear a bunch of news about what the SEC is talking about. They're really not talking about anything that different from what everybody else is. They're just sort of getting their opinion on where the Rice Commission needs to go, like those recommendations and where they stand, and again, some transfer stuff. I want to talk about TV in a second. The one thing about transfers is the SEC is a conference that is really pretty hardcore about transferring within conference, as opposed to maybe, well, the Big 12 is sort of tough on this. The Pac-12 loosens a little bit. The Big 10 has a harsh stance on it. The ACC seems to have a little more wiggle room. The one thing the SEC may try to do is change their in-conference transfer rules a little bit. Where, if anywhere, do you see that going?
Well, the one thing that's been proposed is if you have a bowl ban imposed upon you by the NCAA because of something you did wrong, that your players would be allowed to transfer in conference without sitting out. And I think that would be an interesting change and give all the schools that wanted to see Ole Miss punished one more chance to kick Ole Miss when it's down. But we'll see how much they like it when they're on the receiving end of it, when all their players are eligible to leave. But I do think that's
that's something that we're, and it's one of the few times where the players' interests align with the school's interests, because the schools do want to make harsher punishments for breaking the rules, like you were just talking about. This would be one of those where if you were allowed to leave and transfer within conference because your school messed up or your program messed up and you got a postseason ban, well, then all of a sudden those nearby schools probably look like a much more attractive option than the ones in another league where it's either a step down in competition or it's a lot farther away from where you are. So I think that makes it pretty interesting. I'm curious to see if they change the grad transfer aspect of it, you know, where you're independent of NCAA punishment, where will they change it to say, if you're a grad transfer, not an undergrad transfer, but a grad transfer going within the league, you can just go within the league and play without sitting out. Because, you know, if you look, like the Pac-12 doesn't seem to care. You've seen guys even go from like Cal to Stanford, mm-hmm. and they don't care. So I think, and you've seen in the Big Ten, you've seen guys do the same thing. They had to get a waiver, but they've gotten it in most cases. So I think with the SEC, you might see some movement on that. I'm not sure where everybody falls on that. I know Nick Saban would prefer that rule stayed in place as it is, where you can't immediately play if you're within the conference without a waiver for the commissioner. But my guess is that the majority really wouldn't care, that if you're a graduate, they're probably like, okay, you can go.
There's a weird – see, I kind of agree with Saban here on this issue, because he got put in the spotlight. They have a grad transferring offensive lineman who is right now being – I think, unless I missed something over the weekend, who is being blocked, quote-unquote blocked, from transferring within conference. Wait, is that the case? I'm trying to remember, because there's a kid who's going to Oregon. No, they have one more, right? Yes. Right, they have another kid who's going to Tennessee, right?
Right.
Okay, so I think you should allow kids to sort of go what they want. On one hand, on the
well,
other hand,
my thing. If you're saying there's the proprietary information, trade secrets they have that you don't want to share with an opponent, well, guess who has more proprietary information about Alabama than Brandon Kennedy, backup center?
Exactly, Jeremy Pruitt.
Jeremy Pruitt.
Yes, exactly. So right, so it's a farce anyway. But I do agree with Saban on this point. If you're going to have a rule that is not really a rule, then you're essentially putting it on the coach and the school to do the quote-unquote blocking.
Because, right, either have the rule or don't have the rule, but don't have this middle ground where they are now, where you make the coach look bad
right.
saying, hey, there's a rule, and then the conference doesn't attempt to enforce the rule and makes the coach look bad twice. And that's what happened with Maurice Smith when he transferred from Alabama to Georgia. Saban said, there's a rule, and then he's looking at the league office like, hey, he's going to back me up on this, right? And the league office is like, we'll get back to you on that. And then like a couple weeks later, they're like, no, we're not going to back you up on this, actually. And Saban just gave up and let him go. His thing is, just tell me there's no rule, and I'll live with that.
Right.
And again, just like we talked about with Nick Saban, there's a way he can turn that to his advantage, because if there's a player at Vanderbilt who plays a position that Alabama needs, and has proven that he's good at Vanderbilt, and he's graduated from Vanderbilt, well, guess who's going to start at Alabama next year? That guy.
Right. Yeah, I'm with Saban on this. And I proposed something. I threw it out there as, hey, why don't you just, and this could go for any conference, just completely take it out of the school's hand. You like literally say you have no say. If that kid wants to transfer
well, that
within conference.
That's what they're going to do nationally.
Right,
that's what
right.
they're going to do nationally.
Right.
But they do, yeah. The conferences all have to figure out their own rules on this. And it sounds like the SEC is going to talk about doing exactly what you're saying. I just don't know where each school falls on it. So it'd be hard to predict
right.
how they're going to vote on it.
So literally like set up a panel within the conference. Use like a bunch of faculty reps and just, you know, change it every year and say, okay, you're going
to
be the.
When you've graduated, you've fulfilled your obligation to the school. The school has fulfilled its obligation to you. You can leave and go wherever you want and play immediately. They can cut you immediately, and then you can go play immediately where you want. That would be fine. That would be perfectly legitimate on both sides of the equation and have different rules for grads and undergrads.
I don't know if I love the idea of being allowed to cut. I don't know if I – okay, we got – I'm going to
– graduated.
Yeah, I know. But
what's good for the goose is good for the gander, Ralph.
Yeah, no, but that's not the way this thing is set up. This is all about the student athlete. Seriously. I mean, like, if you're going to play, like, we're prioritizing.
They're graduated. They're going to grad school.
If we're prioritizing, hey, we want to do things about putting the student athlete first, you can't then sort of tweak it that way. So I want to move on from that for just a second.
Sure, you can. You should. I just think you should treat both sides equally in that.
This is not.
Throw a bone to the coaches a little bit.
This is not equal. We prioritize the student athlete, so it's not equal.
They've never actually prioritized them. What makes you think they'll start now?
But my point is, if you're going to say it, actually put some pressure on you to do it. That's my point is, if you are going to say it, do it.
Do the things they say. No. How long have you been covering this? You know they're lying when they say this stuff, right?
I want to see at least kernels of truth, though. That's my point. Okay, so
they don't actually tell the truth. That's the problem.
So I want to talk about wrestling going to network television and why that could be a positive for college sports when all the big TV deals come up in the mid to early 20s. Essentially, you wrote that, hey, maybe instead of worrying about like over the top and Netflix, and maybe that'll be part of it too, but like Netflix and Google and Twitter and Facebook showing games, maybe like NBC will just say, we want the Big 12 and we're going to have, you know, a bunch of college football games on, you know, we're going to flip flop between Notre Dame and a Big 12 game every Saturday night.
Well, I thought it was really interesting. I remember laughing along with everybody else, I think it was last September, at this Wall Street Journal story that they interviewed all these 20-somethings, and they were like, wow, you can get ABC and NBC and CBS and Fox for free? You just have to buy an antenna? Like, is that legal? And yes, it's legal. In fact, people have been doing it for almost 100 years. And what's interesting is, all those broadcast networks still have the biggest reach of anything. And they still make a lot of money, and it's still the best way for advertisers to get to you, and they still rely the most on advertising revenue compared to cable channels that rely on subscriber fees mostly, but also some advertising revenue. I saw this thing with Fox and SmackDown, $200 million a year for 104 hours of programming. And I'm like, wait a second. How many hours of programming is the CBS-SEC deal? And it's 17 games, which 17 times 4, I'm not good at math, but that's pretty close. It's not quite 104 hours of programming, but it's close. And they only pay $55 million a year and get twice the ratings that SmackDown gets. Like, I'm like, what the heck? This is going to be a bargain for somebody if they're going to pay along the levels of what the Big Ten is getting now, because that's the most recent deal that anybody's done, is that Big Ten deal with Fox and ESPN. Everybody's worried that because ESPN has been losing subscribers because of cord cutting, that suddenly there's going to be less money from TV. I don't think there's going to be less money. I think it's going to be the same or more once they get around to these next set of deals, because the broadcast networks are going to want live sports. Because this is what that SmackDown thing signals to me. Fox has been showing, I believe there was a scripted show and a reality show in their primetime Friday night lineup. So, because Fox, their primetime ends at 10 p.m. They don't go to 11 p.m. like ABC and NBC and CBS. So they had a scripted show and I think Hell's Kitchen or some Gordon Ramsay show, reality show. So they've ditched those in favor of SmackDown, which, while the results are scripted, people watch it like it's a live sporting event.
Mm-hmm.
And it is broadcast live. So it's you know, if we're talking about apples and apples, it's the same thing as a basketball game or a football game or whatever. The fact that they're doing that and they're making the investment into that tells me they feel like that brings them a better audience than scripted shows or reality shows, that there's more bang for their buck in that. So, like you said, what if NBC or CBS decides they want to make a bigger play in the college football. What if somebody decides they want to have a featured Friday night game?
Right.
Which I don't know if that'll ever happen with the SEC, but we know the Big Ten will do it. We know the Pac-12 will definitely do it.
Right.
The Big 12 probably would do it. And, you know, if you can get 4 million or 5 million viewers, because SmackDown gets 2.6 million viewers on USA.
Mm-hmm.
So let's assume that goes up because of the broadcast network has a bigger reach.
Yeah, knock it up another million and a half. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's assume it goes up to 3.5 million. Well, all of a sudden, you've created a pretty good market for NBC or CBS to go, you know what? We could ditch whatever we've got going that night. And remember, there's costs in whatever they're programming now. You know, you have a scripted show, depending on how much you're paying the actors and the crew and all that stuff. That costs money. So it's not a terrible investment if you're going to get, you know, a piece of the Big 12 or a piece of the Pac-12. And here's the deal. To get the prices to where they are now or higher, all you need are two bidders, really. And you're going to – I'm thinking you're going to probably have three or four because ESPN is still going to want to be in on this.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going – despite what you've read, they're not going anywhere. They're still a multi-billion dollar unit of the Disney Corporation, and they do kind of own the college football space still.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to be in on it. We think Fox will still be on it. Fox has been very, very active of late in that, and they also have a cable channel, a program, and a broadcast network. So CBS and NBC, if they suddenly decide, you know what, the scripted and reality shows are getting zero ratings. We put a middling Big Ten game on Friday night. We'll get 4 million bucks or 4 million viewers. Heck yeah, we'll take that. You know, so that's the thing I'm thinking. And then also, you know, does NBC want to do more on Saturdays beyond Notre Dame? Because when you buy Notre Dame, you're getting basically 7 Saturdays a year, 3-4 hours for 7 Saturdays a year. Well, why not have wall-to-wall college football on Saturday? You know, why not try to get, I would say, the one I'm really interested in, and, you know, we're still 6 years away from seeing the bidding for it, is that SEC on CBS package. Like, who will get the biggest SEC game? Because if I'm the NBC, I'd love to add that to Notre Dame. I mean, that'd be awesome. Think about the, you know, 7 weeks a year, you could have a double header of the best SEC game and a Notre Dame home game.
Yeah, that would look pretty good.
That'd be awesome.
One of the people that you quoted in your story, Chris Bevilacqua, who's a consultant who's been in on a lot of these big deals, and, you know, a lot of us go to him because he's a pretty smart guy and generally willing to talk to us. He's sort of pretty consistent. He said it in your story. Like, live sports is still good content. So no matter how much the market changes, live sports and college football has proven to be good. Like, as long as you still have the good content, you're probably going to make money one way or the other. Somebody's going to pay for it. Right now, we're just in the process of trying to figure out who's going to pay for it.
Think about it if you're Procter & Gamble and you need to introduce a new kind of soap, or you're Anheuser-Busch and you want to introduce a new kind of beer. Who can you advertise to now? I mean, how do you advertise to someone who watches scripted entertainment? Yes, you've still got your, you know, millions of people watching The Big Bang Theory, but that number on the aggregate goes down every year. Most people are just going to Netflix or Amazon Prime because they don't have to watch commercials, and it comes on whenever they want it to. Or if they are watching Big Bang Theory, they're watching it on their DVR and zapping the commercial. So if you're those companies, live sports is almost your only option to reach the people you're trying to reach, unless you want to try to get them over the internet, which internet advertising has proven a little bit dodgy. And I say that as someone who works for a website that sells people ads. But it's not as proven as a commercial during a giant football game. You know, you look on social media. When do people talk about commercials? The I'm sorry commercials that Facebook and Wells Fargo and all those have been running. When did those run? Well, during the NBA playoffs. That's the only time I ever saw them. I would never know that Wells Fargo was sorry.
if I didn't watch the Warriors and the Rockets.
All right. Hey, last thing here before I let you run and go cover these meetings, which I am sadly not part of. Yeah, kind of sadly. Maybe not that sad.
You're not missing anything.
Yeah. Well, I'm missing Destin. I mean, I am missing Destin. A couple of days in Destin is not necessarily
the
worst place to be. So what is your favorite off-season space filler content? Are you a best players? Are you a win-loss over-unders? Are you top 25 coaches? What's your favorite flavor of off-season space filler content?
From a radio standpoint, it's win-loss over-unders.
Okay.
Love those. I love opening week lines. You can do hours and hours of radio on opening week lines. But from a written standpoint, it's uniforms.
Oh, my goodness.
Give me uniform columns all day, every day. That's what I want to write, and that's what I want to read. I don't care about who's the best coaches. I don't care about schedule analysis. And I'm going to do all of these things, by the way, in the offseason. But the uniform ones are the one I actually care about.
Yeah. Actually, that's good content, too. People do click on those. It's crazy, but people do. If you actually do a top 15 uniforms or just start doing, like, 10 best, 10 worst, oh, it's mm-hmm. gold, Jerry, gold.
Absolutely. And I just like it because I'm a geek about that stuff. You know, I love going back. There was a website. I forget what the website is, but it archives every helmet, every jersey, every pair of pants that a school's ever worn. And you can have a lot of fun going back into the 60s and 70s and saying, oh, they need to bring this back. They need to bring this back. Like, I would love a Florida State throwback that has a garnet helmet with the logo that has the state of Florida has state down the side.
Mm.
It would just look cool. Like, so I like dreaming those up, and I may be the only person who cares that deeply, but it's more fun for me to write, for sure.
All right, so I'm not going to miss my favorite meal of the year, so let's pub that, because I'm sure that'll be popping up in your column again next week.
Not the Red Bar. I've already written about the Red Bar. And
oh, you did write about Red Bar.
I don't even know if I'm going to get to go to the Red Bar this time. So, I
was going to say, have an extra piece of key lime for me if you were going to go. God.
I will. Yeah, I got to get out of here tomorrow night. So, tonight we're going to a place I hadn't tried before because then I can write about it. But tomorrow night it will probably be Panera Bread in Tallahassee on the drive home. So, it's going to be it's going to be a quick one, but I'll try to get as much scintillating commentary from the coaches as I can, or as much as I can stand.
Enjoy. Yeah, I didn't realize this was going to be a one and done for you. That's great. Boy, nothing better than two straight days of five-hour drives from Gainesville to Destin.
Yeah,
oh, buddy. That's living the life, baby.
You know what? You know what I'm going to do tomorrow, Ralph?
Yes.
I'm going to download the AP Top 25 podcast and listen to it.
That's so egotistical. Just listening to yourself. You're just gonna...
Oh, no. I'm not listening to one. I hate my own voice. I'm going to listen to all the back episodes.
Oh, good. Yeah, George and I did one last week that was excellent. I interviewed Lincoln Riley the week before.
Better.
Yeah, Lincoln Riley the week before was really good. Go back to get the PJ Fleck one. That was solid as well.
Absolutely. See, that's good. No, I don't want to listen to my own voice ever. So don't worry. I will not be listening to this one. I was here for it.
Wonderful. Hey, Andy, thanks as always. Enjoy Destin, and best regards to everyone down there.
All right. See you, Ralph.
And now, three and out. First down. Bill Mallory died last week at the age of 82. He was a head coach at four schools. The longest stop was his last at Indiana, where he became the Hoosiers' winningest coach ever. Mallory's career winning percentage took a hit in his first few seasons building Indiana to respectability. He also had a couple of years at the back end of his time in Bloomington that weren't great. But when it comes to degree of difficulty, Mallory's work at Indiana was pretty impressive. The Hoosiers have 11 bowl appearances in their football history. Six came in an eight-year span under Bill Mallory. Second down. As Andy and I discussed, this is the season for guest ranking coaches, an almost impossible task once you get past the first four or five. Maybe I'll do one myself and post it on Twitter at some point, maybe even with this podcast, depending on how motivated I am. Saban, Meyer are the easy one and two, of course. Then you have Dabo, Sweeney, and Chris Peterson somewhere in the next three. Jimbo Fisher, Gary Patterson, probably Mark D'Antonio are in the next wave along with David Shaw. At that point, things get a little less clear, and a lot depends on whether it's too soon to rank Lincoln Riley, who's only had 1 year at Oklahoma, or whether you dock Chip Kelly for being away from the game for a while. How much do you value Jim Harbaugh's excellent tenure in the NFL? How much do you value Bill Snyder's legacy when it gets back to current rankings? Because nobody's done a better job than making K-State relevant than Bill Snyder. I tend to be a bit higher on Brian Kelly than most people, maybe not as quite as high on Paul Chryst. I'm very bullish on Pat Fitzgerald and maybe a little bearish on Gus Malzahn. Clearly, I'm going to have to do this at some point just so you can get me on the record. Third down. The Division I college baseball tournament starts this week, heading to Omaha in a couple of weeks and the College World Series. I'd like to send thoughts and prayers to all my college sports writer colleagues covering this event around the country this week. College baseball can be a very fun sport. I have covered it before. It's got a great atmosphere. But multiple games and rain or weather delays on the same day can make covering a regional or a tournament excruciating. Here's wishing sunny days and pitchers throwing strikes to everyone on deadline. That's the show for today. I'd like to thank my producer, Warren Levinson, for making me sound good. You can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts and wherever you find your podcasts. You can also find us at collegefootball.ap.org. Please subscribe so you don't miss an episode. I'm Ralph Russo, the college football writer with the Associated Press. Thanks for listening, and come back for more next week of the AP Top 25 College Football Podcast.